Hi, we're the Bootlickers, and you're listening to
Queer Music Heritage
on KPFT in Houston.
There's a gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. It's a gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a time of open love.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I'm here on the fourth Monday of each month to bring you an hour devoted to our culture's music. I plan to cover a lot of territory in terms of years and types of music. Mostly, I just don't think the gay and lesbian music of the past should be forgotten, and I try to give a little information about the music and artists as I go. I also slip in songs from the present as well. I introduced this segment with the song Gay Spirit by Charlie Murphy from the 1979 album Walls to Roses. It's one of my favorite gay anthems, and here's just a little more of it.
It's a gay spirit singing in our eyes, leading us through these troubled times. A gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a time of open love.
I'm going to start off tonight's show with a clip from a gay comedy album. But it isn't just any comedy recording. You've probably heard comedy CDs by Ellen DeGeneres or Suzanne Westenhofer or Kate Clinton. Well, this was the first openly gay comedy album, and it was by Robin Tyler. Now, many of you may know of her as one of our most outspoken activists, especially with her involvement with the Last March on Washington. But she has a long list of accomplishments I can mention. She was the first openly gay or lesbian comic in America. She was a member of the steering committees of the National Marches on Washington in 1979, 1987, and 1993, and was the original executive producer of the Millennium March in 2000. She has produced 25 women's music and comedy festivals, drawing hundreds of thousands of lesbians to festivals in California and in the South. And most recently, she was one of the main forces behind the Stop Dr. Laura movement. I recently interviewed Robin, and I started the interview by asking her about something most people probably have not heard about, her early days as a comic. To give you an example, here's a short clip from her 1978 album, Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom, the first openly gay comedy album.
Last summer I spoke at the Gay Liberation Parade in San Francisco. Now, I am not gay. I'm not. I'm a lesbian, but I'm festive. Come on, let's face it, guys. We are two different sets of cultures, right? We got to realize the differences. Gay Liberation Parade in San Francisco. 250,000 people marched in that parade. Now, a lot of folks said, hey, they're flaunting. Flaunting. Isn't that a funny word? When a heterosexual shows us a picture of their family, it's called sharing. When we show them a picture of our lovers, it's called flaunting. So I felt it was time to share. I stood on the platform, and I was actually able to see 100,000 people in front of me. And I thought about the woman who was responsible for my being there. No, not my mother. Anita Bryant. Anita Bryant. Anita Bryant, who is to Christianity what paint by numbers is to art.
Robin, I've read that the album Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom was the first openly gay comedy album. How did that album come about?
In the 70s, Pat Harrison and I, Harrison and Tyler, were a female comedy team. We were assigned to ABC. We had come out of being a feminist comedy team. So we played all over colleges and so forth and so on. And the network picked us up and decided we'd be a great replacement for, you ready for this, Donny Marie Osmond. They were looking for variety show people. So we did four pilots, and we ended up starring on the Kroft Comedy Hour. And at the same time, I was political. You know, this gay liberation was happening, gay lesbian liberation. And at the time it was gay, then we added lesbian, then bisexual, now transgender, and now queer. So I had to gain 30 pounds just to put everybody's rights on my T-shirt. Anyway, what happened was, it was interesting. And it's actually, if you look at the history of comedy and the civil rights movements. It's happened to most of the comics that came out during their era of civil rights. We were just beginning to, as a movement, emerge, as reemerge, again, as a movement. And so here I was starring on television and all these pilots being very, generically cute. And offstage, I was beginning to talk all over. And I got a call from a guy, and he said, "We're having a gay pride celebration. Go say some gay jokes." And I said, "I'm not doing any anti-gay jokes." He said, "No, do some pro-gay jokes." And I thought, well, what are pro-gay jokes? I couldn't find it. It was interesting. So I went to the celebration, and he said, get up there and do something pro-gay. Just make it up. So I got up and I did this joke about running into a right-wing guy. And he said, "I think they should take all of you queers and put you on an island someplace." And I said, "They did, darling, and they call it Manhattan." And that was my first gay joke. And they laughed, and it was an entirely gay audience. And so I just started to make up jokes where we weren't the object of the humor, where we were the subject of the humor. Humor is the razor-sharp edge of the truth. Humor is anger and truth made funny. There's no such thing as just kidding. So when people used to do faggot jokes, comics, or they still do faggot jokes, or even Eminem, tries to make it funny to kill the faggots. There's no such thing as just kidding. For an audience to laugh at something, they have to believe that the premise is true. And so what happened in the 70s is I began to go on stage and turn the tables and do jokes that were pro-us in order to combat all the jokes that were anti-us. And out of trying to do those jokes and beginning to do those jokes, I was beginning to formulate material. And then Anita Bryant came along, and I'm so grateful for Anita Bryant. I am. I'll tell you something. Anita Bryant and Laura Schlesinger have done more for comedy than, these are great women. I know a lot of people look at them and they say, "Oh, well, they're not." These are very important women, because all of us was like a wealth of material, So I came out against Anita Bryant. I was doing jokes on her, and
there's a great quote on the Bridesmaid album that Anita Bryant is to Christianity what Paint by Numbers is to art.
Right. But I switched it to Schlesinger's. Laura Schlesinger's to Judaism what Paint by Numbers is to art. So you know what's great? If you hang on to jokes and nobody hears them for 20 years, well, a new bigot comes along. You just have to switch it. All my Nixon jokes on Bush, Bush, who makes Dan Quayle look like an intellect. But everything gets recycled. So isn't it interesting? Prejudice never dies. I guess neither does comedy. So I came out with an album called Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom. And the hardest thing about that first album was revealing myself. I had the same problem that Richard Pryor had when he started coming out. And instead of doing establishment comedy, which he did for many, many years, he started coming out and talking about being black and being raised in the ghetto and so forth and so on. And the hardest thing when he came out and started revealing himself was that he was attacked by other blacks. They didn't want this. They wanted Bill Cosby, and they wanted Flip Wilson, who are, fine comics, both of them. But when I started coming out and doing humor that was pro-gay and lesbian, people said to me, "Gays and lesbian, you're going to kill your career." Even though they were laughing, "You're going to kill your career. You're going to kill yourself on television. You won't be a star." And I said, "Well, I may never be a star, but unless you can tell the truth as a comic, you can never really be funny." And so I didn't care. I just came out. And the day I was on the Kroft Comedy Hour, it was Patty and I were starring ABC television, Ellen DeGeneres' network. We were the stars. And at the news carried us. And it said, "Avowed lesbian." You couldn't just be a lesbian. You had to say, "I vowed I'm a avowed lesbian." "Avowed lesbian." "I vow it." What they were probably trying to say is out of the closet lesbian. So avowed lesbian Robin Tyler does Anita Bryant jokes, and this was on the national news right after the national broadcast. I'm so glad I came out, because when I came out, I got happy and free and funny, and I didn't know I'd get all the bookings, and I didn't know I'd make a whole bunch of albums. I didn't know I'd make history. I just knew that I couldn't lie anymore. When people say "don't ask, don't tell," what they're really saying is be a liar. And how can you be an artist and be a liar? I mean, how can you, when the basis of art is supposed to be your truth? How can you be a liar? So comedy is a very serious business.
How did that album end up on the Olivia label?
I was dating someone at the time, Boo Price. We were dating, it's a nice word. We were lovers, and just for a while. Boo at the time was, she later became one of the owners of the Michigan Women Music Festival, and she was the one that admitted it to Olivia. And Olivia didn't want to do it. They said, no, no, we've put out a poetry album. It didn't sell. So a comedy album is talking. It's not going to sell. It sold. It sold a lot of albums.
We'll hear more from Robin later in the show.
No closet for me. No closet for me. Closets are for clothing and not for me.
This is Jamie Anderson, and there's no closet for me, or you either, when you listen to Queer Music Heritage on KPFT in Houston.
Closets are for clothing and not for me.
Also, be sure to listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night at midnight on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. And this is a good time to mention that since there are so many obscurities heard on my show, I thought those of you on the internet would like to be able to see photos of the artists and recordings and view the playlist. You could do that at www.queermusicheritage.com.
No closet for me. We belong.
Right now, I want to bring you a very special interview with an artist who I've been wanting to interview for a long time. Her name is Maxine Feldman. Now, most of you have probably not heard of her, but she is one of the pioneers of our gay and lesbian music culture. She recorded the first openly lesbian 45 in 1972, and it was called Angry Athos. Let's start off by hearing that historic recording.
I hate not being able to hold my lover's hand, except under some dimly lit table, afraid of being who I am. I hate to tell lies, live in the shadow of fear. We've run half of our lives from that damn word queer. It's not your your children I am after. It's not even my choice I want to flaunt. Just wanna hear my lover's laughter. Feel like we're animals in cages. And have you seen the lights gay bar, not revealing wrinkles or rages? God forbid we reveal who we are. I hate not being unable to hold my lover's hand, except under some afraid of being who I am. No longer afraid of being a lesbian.
Maxine, please tell us about the writing of the song Angry Athos.
Ah, okay. Angry Athos, I wrote May 13th, 1969. And I hadn't been playing the guitar for years because I had been thrown off the Boston Coffee House circuit back in 63 for being queer and bringing around the wrong crowd. And I had just left Boston, and I'd been living down in New York, too. And Mayor Lindsay had sent these cops into gay bars where they would imitate gay guys, and as soon as the guys went outside, they would bust them. Now, that was called entrapment, but it wasn't called entrapment then. So there were many things, you know, being thrown out of college, always having to hide who you were. It got me so damn angry that one night when I arrived in Los Angeles, California, it was the first night I arrived, I wrote Angry Athos, and it just came spewing forth. It just talked about everything that I was angry about, of not being able to hold my lover's hand. We're not child molesters, we're not this, you know, we're not that. And I just figured, well, the best way to put it sometimes was in a song, and this was prior, as you know, since it was May 13th, prior to the gay movement as we know it today, but it was in the air. I mean, what happened, you know, in Stonewall on Christopher Street in the end of June, it was in the air, it was bound to happen. And I think for everyone across the country, whether they lived in a small town or a large city, we were all getting very tired of being invisible and being losing our jobs, losing our schools, losing our parents, you know, who didn't understand us, people trying to convert us. Like, I went to Dr. Bieber in New York, an aversion therapist, and that was one of the worst experiences I ever had in mental health. And he told my parents he could convert me to being straight. He could make me straight again. Well, we know that that does not work. To me, being queer is like breathing. So does that kind of...
That's a pretty good start. Where did you get the title for the song?
All right, Athos is one of Sappho's lovers. And I had, of course, read Sappho, the lesbian poet. And originally I was going to call it Sappho's, you know, sadness or something. And I went, no, let me call it Angry Athos. And anyone who will know who Athos is, if they've read Sappho, they will know that Athos is one of her many lovers. So, and... when you also look at the words, if you look at Angry Athos, which is spelled A-T-T-H-I-S, it also, if you separate the words out, it becomes Angry at This. So it was kind of a double, I like words, so it was kind of a double meaning.
How did you meet up with Robin Tyler? She kind of got the ball rolling, didn't she?
Well, she recorded the song, and then Robin and, well, she was with her partner then, Patty Harrison, it was Harrison and Tyler. They came to the college campus. I went back to school after being thrown out or being told I need a year of psychiatric help before I could come out. And they performed on the college campus. Well, I knew they were queer. And they came over to the Women's Center, and I played Angry Athos. And Robin said, you're going to open up our act. And for a year, I toured in front of them wherever they played in California and did Angry Athos. And in the interim, I was writing more material. And I also, since they were the comics, and I was like the, you know, the folk singer, very serious, da-da-da. And one day I was playing, and I forget, Pasadena Civic Auditorium for a women's thing. And my guitar, because it was very cheap, broke. And I started to use humor as a way to cover up, number one, my embarrassment. And I really loved doing it, because the wave of laughter that came back to me, I really loved. So I started to add comedy into my music, and you can't be in front of a comic if you're going to be a comic. It just doesn't work out that way. So I knew the time was coming that I would have to part from Harrison and Tyler. And actually 20th Century Fox, because they had just done an album, Harrison and Tyler had just done an album called Wonder Woman, and they had a little bit of tape left over, so they said, come on, let's sneak into the studio. And 20th Century Fox never knew that they actually produced the first lesbian record. Also during that time, I want to mention that a good friend of mine, as you know, had also done a record within that week to Madeline Davis out of Buffalo, New York, called Stonewall Nation.
The same week?
Within a week of each other,
wow.
I think. You know, within a week or within a month. and we both did, you know, it was 45s. We couldn't, I know Patty, Robin, and myself went everywhere, and, you know, we could hardly give the record away. People were still so closeted and so, how could you be so, you know, how can you be like that? How, all that pride, all that, da, 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 you know, it was like, and I would look at them and say, well, how come you're not? So working with, you know, Patty and Robin, and they took a chance on me, and certainly in touring in front of them and being their opening act was a wonderful experience.
How did the audiences react?
The audiences were wonderful. They were absolutely wonderful. Sometimes they were shocked and stunned, but the audience themselves were fantastic. And I remember one incident out in Ventura County. And I forget what school we were at, and I opened for Patty and Robin, and Robin and Patty then did their comedy routine. And the, I don't know whether it was the head of the school or the head of the women, I have no idea. She wasn't going to pay Patty and Robin because they brought a lesbian, a queer, you know, there. So never tell that to a comic or to a performer if the microphone is still on. And Robin went right back out, and we were playing a gymnasium, so you can imagine how the acoustics were in there. And Robin said, we're just told we're not going to get paid because we brought Maxine. Now, do you think that's fair? Well, the audience, of course, didn't think it was fair. Well, the woman wound up at, they got paid that night. And as I said, in that 1 year, we played everywhere once. It was quite an adventure. I mean, I loved it. I loved it. Every place was a new place to do it. So that was great. And there was always audience there, and there were always young women and young men who thought they were the only ones, and by my being so out front, they'd come over to me after and talk to me, and I'd tell them, you know, what, where they could go, et cetera, which is probably why I never became a separatist, which was a big thing that was starting to happen, because I really wanted to be a bridge to let someone know they weren't the only one, that they weren't alone, and I knew that many young queers, male or female, could come to a performance if I was playing on a college campus as opposed to a women-only event, of which many just felt really fearful going in there the first time. And I know about that uncomfortableness, and I know that, oh God, am I the only one? I knew how that felt, and I knew it felt awful. And so I just thought of myself as a bridge and played every place I possibly could. Plus, you know, women-only events, but I'd play every college campus and any coffee house that would have me. So that one or two people who could not come into that queer space only could come and see me and talk to me after and almost be hidden within the whoever else was there. But at least I knew my music reached them and it made them feel comfortable enough to come over to me and ask where could they go, what, you know, where are the, you know, usually where were the gay bars then, and but their gay community services center in Los Angeles had just opened. So I could send them to many places that could find others like ourselves, but it didn't always have to be within the bar situation.
On the 45, who was doing backups on that?
Okay, that was a group called Sisterhood, and who they are is Naomi Martinez, Little Bear, and Robin Flowers. And Robin Flowers went on to make many different albums and do backups for many, many people. Robin is one of the most talented musicians I've ever worked with and played just about any stringed instrument with, she has the most dexterous fingers I have ever seen, whether it's mandolin, guitar, lead, bass, it doesn't matter. She is just superb.
So did you know her before you did the 45?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd seen them perform, and, you know, we worked together a little, and, I, you know, we needed a little backup, so I said, well, let's get Robin and Naomi to do backup harmonies, and it was great.
I wonder if that was the first recording they were on.
That probably was. I'm sure that probably was true. Yeah. Because then later, Naomi went to form a band called, I think Izquierda is the name of it.
And Robin Flower was on your album.
Yes. But I had told her then, I said, if I ever get to do an album, I want you as my, you know, lead guitar player.
That reminds me that you were at Cassie Culver's recording session when she did her album, Three Gypsies. Can you share any memories of that?
Yeah, I mean, working with Cassie, I just, Cassie and Willie, which was, they were both at one time, they would share the stage together, and so it would be a really nice long set. And out at National Women's Music Festival, their manager at that time was Mary Spottiswood. Spot is her nickname. And we had all performed at the Boston Women's Music Festival in 75. And then 76 at National, I went to National, and all the performers that would perform there were performing on stage. So I went over to Ginny, I went over to this one, that one, saying, can you give me a few minutes so I can, out of your set so I can play? And everyone turned me down, except when I approached Spot and said, well, do you think Willie and Cassie would be willing to give me time? Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was just a wonderful, I think it was 75, because I played there, I guess, legally 76. And they gave me space on the stage so I could perform my music, which was wonderful. But Cassie, I just have a very warm spot for saying, sure, have, you know, have Max come on and perform. And when my guitar got broken at the first March on Washington, she let me use the guitar. So, I mean, it was just, you know, with some of the performers, you have a really warm recollections and memories. And Spots, she always stays in my heart because she said, absolutely, I'm sure the girls will have no problem with it. And so I got to play, and that got me other gigs, and for that I'm very grateful.
But you helped with the recording. That was like an all-star cast for Cassie's album.
Oh, that was fun, yeah. Oh, my God, yes. That was quite wonderful up in Maine, up on the island, Deer Isle. Yeah, it was like anybody at that point, probably with the exception of Chris and Holly, were playing on it. And that's what people used to do then. And now in the early 70s, middle 70s, is bounce back and forth between each other's albums and play on them, which was wonderful because you got the best of everything that you possibly could get. And it was a lot of fun up in Maine. I mean, we were all still, I would say, somewhat naive
mm-hmm.
in yep. terms of the music industry and everything else. But it was a great experience. We worked at the Noel Stukey's studio, or, as you know, Paul from Peter, Paul, and Mary. And he was a lot of fun. And the studio was a simple 8-track. When I think of how many tracks you can record on today, it blows my mind. It was wonderful to be around all these musicians and women, you know, a woman engineer, and different ideas would pop out, and it was great. It was wonderful.
I interviewed Boo Price recently, and she talked about that couple of weeks, too.
Oh, yeah, we lived up in this wonderful old house that was, you know, built up there as a summer home, and we had a great, I mean, there are all those musicians in one house. I mean, we laughed a lot. We laughed a lot and sang Broadway tunes, if you can believe that.
You were at the 1979 March on Washington. I saw you there, and I was trying to make sure my memory was correct, because after so long, you wonder if you really did.
Okay, well, they had me up in a cage while people were gathering to line up to march. And I played Friday night, let's see, was it Friday night or Saturday night on the stage? And then when the march was beginning, I guess, which was on a Sunday, would that be correct?
Sounds
they
right.
Had me up in some little, I don't know what, but it was, you could hear my voice over as people were getting lining up ready to march.
I want to ask you about some of your songs. Please tell me about Amazon.
Okay. I was living in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. This is 76. What month, I cannot recall. And I woke up from a dream, it seemed like, and these words just poured out the guitar and started to, you know, a melody started to flow. And I was, wow, this is really amazing. And I got to play it for the first time publicly at National Women's Music Festival when Cassie and Willie let me take some time from their set so I could appear as a guest on their set. And that was just the first time it got the audience response. You know, it was like, that's the only way you know if you've written anything good.
That was like 76?
Yeah, yeah, that was 76. And the audience just went wild for it, and I was like, okay, and now it's used, which I'm sure if you spoke to Boo, it's used, I've played it at Michigan every year, and even when I'm not there, it's sung, it's part of the opening ceremony of the Michigan Women's Music Festival every year. So whether I'm there or not, I'm there in spirit, embraced. It had nothing to do with me, you know what I mean? It's the people love it, and I'm sure the people who go now don't even know who the hell I am, except for some oldies and moldies, you know?
Here is Amazon.
Amazon women rise. Amazon women weaving rainbows in the sky. Amazon women fly. Amazon women fly. I am and once was called Amazon. Now I am called lesbian. I know that the matriarchy ruled back then. Sisters, the matriarchy's gonna rule again. Amazon women rise. Amazon women weaving rainbows in the sky. Amazon women fly. Amazon women fly. The goddess has not forsaken thee. She's just reawakening you and me. Heal yourselves, practice your craft of the wise. Amazon nation is about to rise. Amazon women rise. Amazon women weaving rainbows in the sky. Amazon. Our Amazon witches have returned from the flame, and we will dance in our moon circles once again. Sisters, we've known and loved each other in our past. Amazon nation is rising at last. Amazon women rise. Amazon women weaving rainbows in the sky. Amazon women fly. Amazon women fly.
Tell me about Closet Sale. I love that song.
Oh, me too. I gotta like that too. It was my way of just being playful with people to come out of the closet, you know? I used to do a whole rap of humor, but it was just a way of using a four-letter word without using a curse word and telling people to come on out. Come on out. It's okay. But I never out somebody, because I think coming out is a personal issue and a personal, you know, response. I may know who's queer, you know, in the, quote, showbiz community or whatever, but I figure in time they'll out themselves. But to me, that song was always, to anyone, no matter where they were, to come out of the closet. But the only thing that should be in your closet is clothes. You shouldn't be living your life in the closet. The more of us that come out, the more rights we get, or the more volume that we have, and not only in sound, but volume as in bulk in number. And numbers count, or else the presidents wouldn't be courting us these days, as they have every 4 years, for endorsements and everything like that. And I'm just really happy that they're there, and I have that song I always love. It's fun to play, it's fun to sing, and of course getting the audience to say their favorite four-letter word, come, 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 come.
Okay, this song shows us just a taste of Maxine's humor. Here is Closet Sale.
I have a few questions to ask. Have any of you ever been a single person living with another couple? Is that not boring, right? Well, not that I'm... Now, don't call me a coupleist or a coupleism or whatever. I have been in both situations, single and going with somebody. But I found when I was living with another couple that when I would try to watch television, they would be on the couch going, I love you, I love you. And you're trying to watch a program, and you're horny too. You try to get yourself a glass of milk out of the refrigerator, and they're up against it again, right? There is no way of getting around them. Well, one night, when I was living with a couple called Mary Carol and Ivy out in Los Angeles, California, I came home from a gig, and the place was dark. There was no shh, shh, thank you. The place was very dark. So I flipped on the switch, and I saw this little... It was like something over the switch, and I said, what the hell is going on here? Finally, I got the switch on, and you know how tacky we all are when we first get together with someone, right? I mean, we've all done this. We walk through the woods, and we find a weed, and we get down on our knees with this weed, and we pick it up from the ground. We say, this is our weed. Right? There's a million rocks on the P-Town beach, and when we walk along it, it's our rock! Anyway, there I was. I came home, and there was this note on the wall. And the note said, you turn me on. Right. No tacky, right? So I went to the bathroom to throw up. Now, there was a note in saran wrap on the toilet seat that said, no shit, I love you. Now, having a little Virgo in me, a little lint monster that picks and cleans up, I went to hang up my coat in the closet. And there was a note on the closet door that said, come out of the closet and love me. I said, Mary, Carol, and Ivy, I'll get you for this. So I wrote the following song. I'd love you to sing the chorus with me. It is a word that we write a lot about, like to do a lot, sometimes can't do, wish we could do. We spend so much time with this four-letter word, it is unbelievable. All right. A lot of tittering in this audience. That's one of my favorite images. You know that, Lori? A room full of titters. You're not singing.
Come, 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 come. Come, 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 come. Come, 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 come. Come, 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 come. Come, come, come.
Wait a minute. Now just wait a minute. I don't hear you in the back. You are not coming in the back. Now, for the first time in our lives in a lesbian and gay pride thing, let's see if we can come together. All right?
Hey.
come out of the closet. And love me. Come out of the closet. Be free. Come out of the closet. I know it's a dark in there. So come out away the scream and shout and see everybody everywhere. The whoops are wonderful, but where's the come? I do a clean act. Aren't you getting tired? I'm behind the clothing rack. Aren't you getting tired of those people on your back? I realize your freedom starts when you free your head. So come out with a scream and shout, and let's hang those others up instead. If you need some reassurance, not alone anymore. Take a peek at what you see through the closet door. You're singing with me now. You haven't felt this good since you don't know when. Well, let's find another closet and start this tacky song again. Come out of the closet and love me. Come out of the closet. Be free. Come out of the closet. I know it's dark in there. So come out with a scream and shout and see everybody everywhere. It's been a pleasure coming with you.
That was Closet Sale. Can you tell us about White Mountain Mama?
White Mountain Mama is a song about, well, it's my first one-night stand with someone who I'd known for many, 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 many years. She's since passed on, Barbara Murphy. And it was just, once again, you know, using, when your heart is broken, you use a little humor to, because I find that that's what heals it, and that's what White Mountain Mama is about. And, of course, it was that forever triangle. I was really into her, and she was really into somebody else. So the forever triangle that goes on, not unusual, not unique by any means, but I have this habit of putting what goes on in my life down on the on music sheets, except I might exaggerate a little, you know, just for the humorous aspect. As I've always said, never let the lack of facts stop you from telling a good story.
All these songs are from Maxine's 1979 album called Closet Sale. Here is White Mountain Mama.
Night stand in her bed, only she was so concerned. Who's leading while she led? White Mountain Mama, what goes on in your head? Well, I had too much to drink and my feelings were asleep. I looked in her eyes and I could not believe. At my age, I could be so naive. While I was waiting, she'd get up and leave. White Mountain Mama, you say we can never be. The old woman from the country, and I'm just a kid from New York City. My tears and my rage, I could not find the door. Do you believe I would have stayed for more? Now, I don't want to seem like such a silly boy, but why didn't she tell to me her real feelings? For Eleanor, 'cause there were many things I would have said about my first one-night stand in her bed. Only she was so concerned. Who was leading while she led? Why, my mama, what goes on in your head? You say we can never be. Me old woman from the country, and I'm just a kid from New York City.
like that, mama. You say we can never be. We all come from the country, and I'm just a kid from New York City.
That was White Mountain Mama. Of which of your songs are you the most proud?
Angry at This, definitely. And Amazon, because it's become its own. I never thought that any of my music would ever, quote, be embraced in the way that I've seen other artists' music be embraced, like Chris's Waterfall, Holly's We Are Gay and Lesbian People, and we're singing for Our Lives, where Amazon just was embraced by the people themselves, the women themselves, which really thrilled me. And Angry At This got recorded by a young group of women. I don't think the band is still together, called Your Girlfriend, out of Louisville, Kentucky.
I was going to ask you what you thought of their recording.
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, the lead singer who sang it, I spoke to her on the phone. She said, "Oh, was it okay?" And I said, "I loved it. You captured all the energy and the feeling, and it was wonderful." And also, I loved it because these women are certainly young enough to be my children. So it was like, okay, the next generation has taken this. You know what I'd like to see now is someone like Melissa Etheridge take Angry At This and record it so I could make some money in my old age. and get Katie Lang to sing Amazon. You know what I mean? It's one of the two.
Well, I know you wrote the song in 1969, but this year is the 30th anniversary of the recording of Angry At This. Do you have any comments looking back on all of it?
Oh, well, I think we've come a long way, but we still have so far to go. I'm so glad to see, you know, people like yourself who do radio shows that are still in existence. What bothers me is that I think many of the younger people think we have everything. And I've seen over the 30-year or more period of time, you know, newspapers have disappeared, radio shows have disappeared, things like that, even though we appear to be more in the mainstream. I mean, I'm so thrilled to see people like Melissa Etheridge and Katie Lang and the Indigo Girls be out front, Ellen DeGeneres, etc., Rosie now. As far as we've come, we still have much to go, and of course the language changes greatly. Because when I wrote Angry At This, at that time, the word that I hated was queer. Now I embrace the word like, you know, I wear it like a glove or I wear it like a shirt. But at that, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, this was not a word that it made you shudder. It has changed greatly. So I think what I've received, because every now and then I'll receive a dribble of a letter or something like that from somebody, and they'll tell me that Angry At This had such an impact on them. And they're young. I mean, they're 21 years old. And it's funny because, as I said, you know, queer now is an embraced word, queer nation, queer this, queer that. And I love the word now, but I have to tell you, when I first wrote the song, that was not one of my favorite words. One of the hardest words to get out was lesbian then. And as my own progression in time, I can say, you know, I've always been butch, I've always been loud, I've always been proud, and I've always been very Jewish. And that always hasn't set too well with people, but with humor, I was always able to get in the door. And for that, I'm very grateful. And I've seen the impact that music has on people. I think it's one of the best universal, shall we say.
Well, as Robin Tyler was there at the beginning for Maxine, I want to share Robin's memories of those days. Robin, how did you meet Maxine Feldman?
I'm not sure how we met her. I remember that we were a comedy team, Harrison and Tyler, and we were fairly well known. And I guess we were at somebody's house, and she sat on the floor and sang Angry At This. And we said, "You've got to come." We were playing a lot of universities at the time, and we said, "You've got to come and sing that on stage. It's fabulous." And then I thought, well, this is really history. We should record this. Now, I knew nothing about recording at all. I just, you know, we had made some albums. You go into a studio and you turn on the tape recorder and, you know, somehow it turns out to be a record. And so that's what happened. We took Maxine thinking it would be very easy to put her on with our act. And then we were down at the university in, I think it was Long Beach, maybe Cal State Long Beach, and they stopped us in the middle of her show. She was part of our show and said we had to get her off because she was a lesbian. And I remember there was an actress, Helena Kalinowicz, who was in Five Easy Pieces. I think she was Jack Nicholson's partner at one time.
And she said, if they go, I go, and there's this big brouhaha, and that's how I remember Maxine.
You took her touring with you. How was that?
It was very, you know, there was no Meg Christian at the time, and there was no women's music at the time. There was this song, Angry Asses, and this huge dyke singing this, you know, how proud she was to be a lesbian. And we were doing pro-lesbian humor in our comedy, but this was like somebody that, you know, we were kind of sort of felt and very Hollywood-looking. So even though we were doing all this lesbian humor, we don't know why it somehow was acceptable. Maybe I don't know why, but when Maxine got up there and she was this big, and I use it in the kindest terms, big because she was proud of it, fat, dykey-looking dyke singing, "I'm proud to be a lesbian," it was very, very difficult, and people started going after her and started going after us and canceling our performances. And when that happened, I knew that we had come upon something very, very important. And at the time, I didn't know we were making history.
How long did she tour with you?
Not long. Maybe a year, year and a half. You know what? The truth is, it was so long ago, I don't remember. But long enough to lose us a lot of bookings that I'm really proud of losing.
Do you remember making the 45? Can you tell us about it?
We went into a little studio, and we you know, we didn't have money. But I thought it should be on a record so that we could try to send it to the radio stations. I'm laughing because what made me think the stations would play it. And we went in and we made it. It was Harrison Tyler, you know, presents Maxine Feldman doing Angry Asses, because we had a production company with AFTRA. And we just printed many of these. And they were little 45s, you know, with big holes in them, like the 1950s records. And we tried to sell them when we were on the road so that, not so much that they'd make money for us, because we could hardly afford to print them, but we wanted to get the song out because we had never heard anything, somebody saying they were a lesbian on, you know, singing it on a record before Maxine sang Angry Asses. Had never heard anybody express being a lesbian in music before. So what she did was very, very important. You know, it's interesting because when you look back, people write about you and they say, you made history. But when you're doing it, you're just, you know, by the sweat of your brow, hoping to scrape together the money to print 10 records. And you have no idea, we had no idea that how important that would be.
And I've got some comments on Maxine Feldman from one other person. Robin Tyler has told me that she considers Boo Price to be the mother of the women's music movement. And this is because Boo was producing women's music since 1974, including live concerts, tours, albums, and festivals. And she produced the Michigan Women's Festival for many years. I asked Boo to share some comments on Maxine.
Gosh, you know, I feel like it's sort of like where to begin. You probably know a fair amount of Maxine's history, but she literally is credited with having made the first recording of women's music with a 45 called Angry Asses. And Robin Tyler actually produced it. Maxine was on the road with Harrison and Tyler, and she was the opening act. And it was very controversial because she always was very out as, you know, a dyke performer. But Robin, you know, definitely had included her in the act, and sometimes they took a fair amount of flack for it. Now, this would have been early 70s. But Robin really, you know, insisted and stood by her. And then put out this 45 called Angry Asses. I think after that, really, Alex Dobson's credited with the first LP of women's music with Lavender Jane Loves Women. But anyway, back to Maxine. You know, she's a powerful, very powerful performer, a great sense of theater, very, very funny, could just as well have been doing stand-up comedy as music, if you ask me. But also, you know, she had a way of channeling that sort of raw outrage that women felt of so much, you know, patriarchal, homophobic oppression. And so, you know, she could get an audience to listen to her and have fun with her, and then also really deliver a pretty strong message. She provided a whole part of the early women's music panorama that nobody else was doing.
Well, I guess you would call this my special tribute show to Maxine Feldman, and it's been a pleasure doing it. I want to thank you all for tuning in, and of course I want to thank Maxine for the feature interview, and Robin Tyler and Boo Price for their interview comments. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write to me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month with another installment of Queer Music Heritage. And don't forget that you can see photos of Maxine, Robin, and the others on my website at, logically enough, www.queermusicheritage.com. I'm closing out this tribute with another tribute. Maxine mentioned that she was proud of the version of Angry Athas that the group called Your Girlfriend recorded. It was on their 1992 album, L Word Spoken Here. Here is Your Girlfriend singing Angry Athas.
I wanna flaunt.